we had the well, you know what? We had the kids here, man. Everybody just seemed like they were having such a great time walking around, shaking hands and saying hi and being a blessing. And I was totally blessed. I'm blessed by you guys every time I'm here. You know what? We had a good work day yesterday. I have a little video just kind of giving some of the things that have been. Oh, one of the things I wanted you to ask you, if you noticed a difference in the roof when you came in, could you raise your hand? Okay, that's good. That's good. So then you might notice it afterwards. So here we go. Okay, here we have it. We had a good day yesterday with the that Dave and Michael worked on that roof all week, and that was the first pictures of it torn off were Monday. Sammy helped the tear down, and then that was like a week project, but it got done, so we were happy about that. They did a great job and finished up with the painting, touching up all the painting yesterday. Everybody that was here, we were able to do that yard over in front of the other building C over there. And we also, I didn't get any pictures, but we planted some trees on this end of building A, that building over there. And then we smoothed out a pad. A friend of Sammy's came and with a bobcat and smoothed out a lot better area that we could possibly use for something now down. First step in being able to use it is have some place you can use. So that was a nice first step. And you know what, God, Dave came, trimmed up a bunch of that before and after of the bushes. Was a little hard to tell because he trimmed them so nicely that they don't look bad afterwards. Like, you can really just chop everything to pieces. But if you look, there's a lot of stuff got trimmed back, ready for the winter. So everything's looking really good, and everybody worked hard. And really, it was a nice day of fellowship and enjoyed it. So I thank you, everybody who was here. We just had a great time. So anyhow, I just wanted to talk about something here. Go up something else. In September of 1928, there was a doctor in London, and he took a vacation, his summer vacation. I guess it was actually August when he left, and he was gone for a month in Scotland. And then when he got back, he had a lab there, and he cleaned it all up. And in the lab, he was cleaning out some petri dishes and stuff he'd left behind, and one of the things he noticed is that where there was mold, the petri dishes were places where you could grow staphylococcus bacteria. And then in where the staphylococcus was growing, where there was moldy spots, there were those little rings around it, and there was no staphylococcus there. He's like, what is this? And he kind of did a little more study and work on it, and he realized that, the mold produced something that killed the staphylococcus. And then that was the first antibiotic, and it killed bacteria. The first person, then once he kind of pursued this and started seeing, the guy who did this, he didn't really have. Oh, it's gonna go scoot in a little closer. There we go. He didn't really have the tools and the ability to like mass market this and really develop it. But he saw it, and then what he did is he pushed it and he promoted it to other people. And then they eventually, and so in 1942 was the first time it was ever used on a human being. And that was a woman who had had a miscarriage, and she had developed an infection, and her her, it had been an infection that got into her blood and was causing blood poisoning. And so then this was this new experimental drug that they gave her this shot of it, and it cleared it up, and she survived. And then that drug was called penicillin. And it was Alexander Fleming was the guy who had gone on vacation. Like you say, he wasn't the, actually, when I was reading more about this, he wasn't the very first person to spot that mold made these little rings where the staphylococcus didn't grow. He was just the first person to pursue it and to really take it and then really promote it and go, hey, there's something here going on that we could do something with. And he saw the potential in it. And there's other recordings of guys from the late 1800s who spotted this effect, but they didn't know what you could ever do with it. And so he was, that's what his big thing is. So kind of, I want to take that into our thing of Philippians about, here we go, discovering joy. Because it's like, you know what? A lot of people have the same kind of circumstances that you're going through. And everything that you, and I know everybody in this whole room is going through different things. And some of those things seem pretty happy and exciting and fun. And some of those things are really downers and really upsetting. But in whatever the situation, people have found out how to have joy in that situation. And it really comes from Jesus. And the situation where we find Paul, let's just go, he's back to our discovering joy little animation here. So Paul, remember, I just want to go back over what this is. Paul, and since I did this, I liked it so much. You know, Paul, and he was sending a letter from Rome over to Philippi. Boom, boom, there he goes. And he sent the letter to Philippi, right? And so Paul is in Rome, and he's in prison under arrest, and he's writing a letter to these people in what's Macedonia, Philippi. And he's talking to them about joy in his life. And last week we saw, you know, really the whole thing was he was unfairly arrested, unfairly accused, people ganging up trying to murder him. And he's saying, you know what? I'm going to rejoice. I'm going to rejoice. And one of the last points we left off with was, well, let's make a decision to rejoice. I heard somebody say the other day, hey, you know what? Today is a great day to have a great day. You know what? It's just, and a lot of it, look, I understand. I don't know that I believe in, quote unquote, the power of positive thinking, but I don't think negative thinking does a whole lot of good for us, okay? So one thing is by looking at, well, what do we have? And so Paul's going to discuss this a little bit more. We're going to talk about a couple more things that he brings up here in this chapter. In Philippians 1, we're going to be in verses 19 through 20. I'm sorry, 19 through 30. Oh, here we go. And yes, the last little phrase of 18 we'll add in here. Yes, I will rejoice, for I know that through your prayers and the help of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, this will turn out for my deliverance. As it is my eager expectation and hope that I will not be at all ashamed, but that with full courage now, as always, Christ will be honored in my body, whether by life or by death. And Paul's decided, look, he's in prison, and really the state, the people who are accusing him want him put to death. He's not really sure what's going to happen. And you know, one of the biggest things I think that creates a lack of joy in our life is like the whole uncertainty. And or it creates at least a lot of stress. Well, if this, and you know, it's easy to kind of let our minds start running. Well, I know that if this happens, then this happens, then this happens, and and then the slippery slope, and then you hit this, and then you're, you know, well, and you know what? All that may happen. I don't know. Usually my experience is I can usually think of a lot more bad things that are going to happen than what actually do happen. That's why we have the say, you know, that's why we figure, you know, worrying really helps. Because about 85% of the things I worry about never happen. So therefore, it must have been the worrying that took care of it, right? So, hey, there we go. And yes, I will rejoice, for I know that through your prayers and the help of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, this will turn out for my deliverance. Does he mean then that he knows he's going to be out of prison, set free? I don't think he knows that. I don't think that's what he's talking about. I don't think his deliverance is, well, I know for sure I'm going to be set free. Well, I guess maybe I'm saying that wrong. He knows for sure he's going to be set free. It's just he doesn't know what set free looks like at this point. Because he says, whether I live or die, in that I want Christ to be honored in my body, whether by life or by death. And I thought it was interesting, this word honored, if you look at the word honored, it's literally, if you look in most of the older translations, they say magnified. And if you look at the Greek, it's magnified. It's really literally the word means magnified. And sometimes I think they put honored because it means by magnified, he's saying by making it, you know, bigger, make Christ magnified, you're honoring him. Okay? So that I think it's a legitimate translation to say honored. But I think it helps to understand that literally what he's saying is magnified. Then you kind of wonder, well, why does he say that? I was thinking about this, and if you take the earth, oh, here we go. The earth is there, that little, not the little blue ones that you can see easily, but the little blue one there. Okay, that's the earth compared to the sun. And so the sun is pretty big, yet the earth seems bigger. Have you ever noticed that? Like, the earth, like if I can drive from here to wherever, it seems really big. The sun seems like, you know, this disk in the sky that puts out a lot of heat and stuff, but it still seems smaller. But then, if you compare the sun to the giant stars, the sun is pretty small. And then if you compare the giant stars to the super giant stars, the sun, you can't put it on here because it's less than a pixel. But you get the biggest stars, and you can't see them without a telescope. The thing is that you're not close enough to them to see them. The earth seems big because you're close to it. The sun seems smaller than the earth because you're closer to the earth. If you want to magnify Christ, get close to him and bring people close to him. And all of a sudden, something that seems like irrelevant and small and I can't hardly see it, all of a sudden becomes big. And it becomes bigger and more important than other things that you thought were bigger and more important. And he's saying, look, in my life, I want to magnify, I want to make it where you can understand how big and how important Jesus is. And I want to do that. And I think his deliverance is to do that, to magnify Christ, to honor Christ. And he wants to do that whether by life or by death. And then he goes in and gives a little explanation. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If I am to live in the flesh, that means fruitful labor for me. Yet which I shall choose, I cannot tell. I am hard pressed between the two. My desire is to depart and be with Christ, for that is far better. But to remain in the flesh is more necessary on your account. You know, so here's Paul. He's in prison. There's an uncertainty. He doesn't know. We know, based on history, that he was released at this point, and he was probably put into a second imprisonment, and there he died. But at this point, he's there, but he doesn't know. Like you say, it's kind of fun. You know, you look back on things, and you know the outcome. It kind of takes a lot of the emotion out of it. Like a lot of the fear. If you know, well, you know, am I going to make this month's mortgage payment? Okay, but then after you've made it, okay, now I have to worry about next month, right? I don't have to worry about this month because it's already done. It's in the past. I know I did it or whatever, you know. So it's past. And so for us to look back at Paul, well, of course he was going to get out of prison. We know he did. But at the time, he doesn't know that. So he's saying, look, I want to magnify, honor Christ, whether by life or by death. And then he explains, really, because for me to live is Christ. That's great. I want to live in a way that magnifies, reflects, builds up others, that is Christ living through me. But if I die, that's a gain. That's better for me than if I live. And I think sometimes part of the thing we have to do is we have to go through this whole process of understanding what reality is. And so often we think reality is, what I can see, what I can feel, what I can touch, what I can smell. And the reality is, there's more to reality. The reality is, there's something bigger there. And there's something bigger. And that if, and he goes through, he goes, look, if I'm to live in the flesh, that means fruitful labor for me. And he says, I would like to be here, verse 24, but to remain in the flesh is more necessary on your account. Look, I can be here and bless you guys. I can help you guys. I can teach you guys. I can show you guys. I can be an example for you guys. And I'm happy to do that. But the reality is, for me, if you know Christ, and that's for Paul, for me, for you, for anybody you know that knows Christ, look, it's better to be with Christ. I think when we lose somebody, it's just hard. And death is, like, God created man without the, there was not, the original intent was not for death to enter the world. But death entered because of sin. Death causes pain. Death, it's an intruder, and it feels that way. On the other hand, for once we know Christ, death is a portal. Death is a door. We walk through. Death is a way that we go to meet Christ. And Paul makes it pretty clear. You know, in another place he says, look, I'm going to put off this tent of my body to have a house. Right? And that is, in other words, if we imagine, like right now, it's like, you know what? I have a tent. That's cool. It's nice. Keeps the bugs out. Pretty good. The rain kind of stays off. It gives me a little bit of shade and all that. And you know, we kind of were walking around. Well, and I'm never giving up my tent. Well, here's a house. This is so much better. No, I've got my tent and I don't want to leave it. No, I've got my, I can't, this, and Paul's like, no. Look, I'm totally willing to stay in the tent for you guys. But I do have a house that they're waiting for me. And I think if we kind of realize what the reality is, all of a sudden, the situation where we don't know what about life, what about death. Listen, these things are hard. They're painful. But also, it's important to keep things in mind of what's reality. What's the truth here? The truth is, if for me to live is gain, to die, I'm sorry, for me to live is Christ, to die is gain. And he literally says, I'm better off being with Christ than being with you guys. Sorry, guys. You know, that's what he's saying. He says, look, and he says, I'm hard pressed. I'm between a rock and a hard place. If I go this way, yeah, but I really would like to stay and help this. But if I go this way to help, well, then I'd really like to be with Christ. I don't even know. This is why part of joy, I think another element of joy here is realizing, look, I don't even know what's best. I'm worrying about this or this or this. This is good, but this is good. I think if we think of Paul as, he's kind of here, he really paints this whole picture as he's in a win-win situation. Not like, oh, I'm not going to be able, I'm going to be, you know, if I die, well, I won't be able to hear with you guys. No, if I live, I won't be able to be with Christ. No, he's going, look, if I'm here, I can help you guys. If I'm not here, I'm with Christ. Good. I got it. Either way, I'm doing pretty good here. But, you know, he says, but it's more necessary. I really would like to stay here with you guys. Convinced of this, I'm sorry, went back one too many hits here. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and continue with you all for your progress in joy and in the faith, so that in me you may have ample cause to glory in Christ Jesus because of my coming to you again. He's like, look, I know that I will remain and continue for you all. This is what my desire is for your progress and joy in the faith, because I want to see you guys growing. I want to see you guys have joy. I want to see you guys understanding more about who Christ is. I want to see you guys taking the next step in your life for Christ, so that in me you may have ample cause to glory in Christ Jesus because of my coming to you again. The thing I was thinking about this is when it's like when there's a pressure, or, you know, he's kind of wants them to continue. He wants to continue this whole idea of being steadfast. Things are going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. But then how do you move and how do you keep doing the next thing? And sometimes when we have some pressure on us, we kind of can crumble. And sometimes you see somebody, you're like, man, there's something happens, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, you didn't realize that there was that strength there. And you don't really, and a lot of times what happens with trials and difficulties is not so much that they make us or break us, but they reveal us. They reveal what's there. One of the things that the foyer roof, you guys saw that, and Michael jumping up on the thing, and we thought that was kind of funny, but part of the thing is once we you could tell there was a problem, because, and we still have more work to do, but if you go out to the foyer and look at the baseboard, you can see like there's swelling, there's stains on some of the walls. That means water is getting in there somehow or other. Well, the somehow or other usually tends to be through the roof. So we went up there and there were some mushy spots, and you could tell there was a dip right at the lip where once it kind of develops a dip, then it holds water, and if there's a crack or a hole of just a tiny little hole, as it's holding water, will it eventually drain out into the wall, bleed into the thing, and you have problems. Water is your building's enemy. That's just the facts. So anyhow, but when you reveal it, like we pull that back, well, it was pretty bad. We already kind of knew, because when we first got here, that fascia that's facing the parking lot, I can kind of tell in that picture, I don't know if you can, but there was like a patch of it about this big that was like that size that was made out of Bondo. If you know what Bondo is. Bondo is like plastic stuff that you mix. It's a resin that gets hard, and we just filled in the bad spot and patched it up and made it look better. But on the other side, on that side, there was a little hole that when it rained, water would drip out of that hole, and the hole was in the fascia. And then if you really wanted to be, you could take your finger and poke it all the way up into the fascia, so you knew it was bad. So we start, but, and then with, everybody keeps saying, El Nino is coming, you know, so we're like, and then I noticed in those rains we had in the summer, we were having problems, so we got to take care of this. So we tore it apart. It revealed, look, there were, a lot of times there are signs, like even in our, like if you take this as a metaphor for our life, there are signs that there's problems. But then when the big rain comes, it really shows it. We have things that we're seeing. Well, you know, it's kind of mushy here. It's kind of soft here. It's not really holding here. The fascia's got these things. But that still doesn't really show up until you get a big rain, and now you got the foyer flooded. It didn't hold the water. And I think this is a lot of times what happens in our life, because God is, he's giving us signs that I need to refocus. I need to re-understand what is my reality. What is it that I'm living for? What is it that I think is going to make me happy? What is it that I think is going to give me joy in my life? And if the things I'm thinking or give me joy are like temporary, or I have to have this, really the only thing that's going to give you joy is Christ. That's just what it boils down to. And I can simplify the whole thing. Look, only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or I'm absent, I may hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel and not frightened in anything by your opponents. He said, look, you know what? And this manner of life is kind of a different way of putting it, because he usually talks about your walk and he has a way of putting that. But one of the key things about Philippi, it was a Roman city, which for us it probably seems like, well, what? Of course it was in the Roman Empire, so of course it was a Roman city. But it was a Roman city in a different sense. It was a Roman city in that it was a special city designated among some other cities, but it was designated that if you were born in Philippi, it was the same as if you were born in Rome. You were a Roman citizen by birth, and not like a second class. You were a Roman citizen by birth, like you were born in Rome. And so the way he puts this about your manner of life, be worthy of the gospel of Christ, is kind of like, the Greek word is kind of like pointing to the fact that, wait, what's your true citizenship? What's your true citizenship? Look, I'm happy I'm an American, but the more important citizenship I have is being a follower of Jesus, being a Christian. That's the thing that really matters. And only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or I'm absent, I may hear that you are standing firm in one spirit. Again, this goes to the point of that Paul made when we studied Romans not too long ago, is that this whole thing of being unified together in one spirit, one mind, not that everybody's the same, not uniform, unified. Uniform is we're all the same. Unified is we're all together, and we're pulling together. We're working together. Our goal is to live for Christ, so that other people can see who Jesus is. Because as they get closer, He's magnified. And as we do that as a group, you know what happens is, if you meet somebody, and this is the power that there is in communion, community, fellowship, in the church, is that if you meet somebody and they're living for Christ and you meet them, you go, oh, okay, that's kind of a odd bird. And then you go and you meet, and then they introduce you to two or three of their friends, and they're also like that. It's like, there's like more than one of these. Then if you meet, then, you know, this is when you bring your friends or you have your friends. Then they come and there's a room full. You go to a bigger church, there's a bunch of people. And they start meeting all these people and they're like, wow, what's going on here? I remember when I read a few years ago, I read a book called Living Biblically for a Year. And it was this guy, he's a reporter, writes for a magazine, and he's raised Jewish. And he wanted to, his goal was to try to, he's like a comedy writer, kind of a guy that writes sarcasm and stuff. And so he decided he was going to follow all the laws and rules of the Bible for a year and see what that did in his life and just see how it affected. And I remember I was at Sam's Club, and they have book tables, and I saw it, and I picked it up and just opened it up randomly to, you know, how you do a book at a bookstore. So I picked it up and I read, and the part I happened to pick up, he was visiting Liberty University. And he'd been doing this this was like the first two-thirds of the year he did Old Testament living, and the last third he did New Testament living, because the Old Testament's longer, and he was Jewish. So he had all these little things he did. He was kind of funny. But then he said, the part I just opened up to must have been towards the back half of the book, and it was, he was at Liberty University, or Liberty Baptist Church, or whatever it was, at the church. And he said he went in, and he said he goes to church there, and he's dressed with robes like the time of Moses, right? And he hasn't shaved or cut his hair for the whole year. So he's got like just a big wild beard and hair like this. And he goes in, and he goes, and the thing that impressed him the most, he said he thought, you know, this is when Jerry Falwell was still alive. He said he thought, oh man, this guy's going to have some crazy thing. And he said, well, it's pretty much what you hear at any church. But, you know, there was nothing crazy. And he said the thing that struck him the most is he went to the Sunday school class, and he said he'd never been slapped on his back and had his hand shaken so many times in his life. And everybody just was like super friendly. Now, he didn't become a Christian in the book or anything, but I was impressed that when I read that, I'm like, oh, I'm going to read this book. Because he was at least fair. You know what I mean? He was fair. He's like, well, this is what happened. Everybody was super nice to me. And it wasn't crazy. It wasn't anything crazy there. I didn't see anything crazy or hear anything crazy. It was just, you know, he talked something out of the Bible, and that was all there was to it. And he goes, but everybody was super nice to me. And the thing is, that has an impact. Like, well, I wish the story was, and then he just, like, went forward and got said, no, that wasn't the story. He's still a... But, you know, at the end of the whole book, the last part of the book, he goes, well, you know what? I can't believe if you would have asked me in January 1 of the year when I started this, and now it's December 31, he says, I'm not going to keep doing what I've been doing for this whole year, because this was like an experiment to write a book about, okay? But he says, it's changed me, and it's changed who I am. And part of it is, and I think that the point here with this is, as your manner of life, let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ. You know what? As you walk for Christ, as you walk day by day, if you realize, look, I'm a Christian. I want to honor Jesus with my life. And I don't think it's about, well, figuring out every little tiny rule and try to follow all the rules. Nothing wrong with rules, but that's, I don't think that's what he's talking about. He's talking about, look, well, Jesus, what do you want me to do? How can I honor you? How can I make it so I bring people closer to you, magnify you in my life? How can I do that? You know, I go back to my opening thing with Alexander Fleming with the little clear spots around the mold. What can I do with this? And how can I? And what he did is he had to promote it and sell it and convince other people with big enough labs and enough money to develop it to turn it into something. He goes, look, this could help people. And they did. And now it's like antibiotics. I mean, you could live without those. Well, a lot of people died without them. But it's like a miracle. But how does this happen? Well, you start. Your manner of life. So that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit. Look, it's like when people hear about you and hear what you're doing, it's like, this is how you're magnifying Christ. This is it. And one mind striving side by side for the faith of the gospel and not frightened in anything by your opponents. And one of the good things about Paul being in prison, unfairly, accused unjustly, held completely wrongly, and in Rome waiting and waiting for his appeal to Caesar, is that he... Everybody said, and you're still writing letters telling us about how to be joyful? And you're saying, look, you mean, yeah, this is this, and people are making fun of you and saying stuff, but you know what? I'm just thankful for what Jesus is doing. And this was encouraging others to do the same thing. And what you do in your life and how you live your life and how you reflect the joy that there is in Jesus in your life and you magnify him like that, that's going to affect the people around you. Is every single one going to go, well, now I need to be saved? No, not probably not. But some will. Some will. Some will go, man, what's going on with you? How can you go? And you know when it's revealed is when you strip back the paper and it's all that rotten wood? Or it's not. And you strip back the thing going, oh, I think that was a problem. Oh, no, it's all fine. Well, whoa, what happened? I thought it was bad. No, there's something underneath there. And that's when the storm, you know, Jesus told a little parable about the storms, right? And he said the wise man built his house on the rock, the foolish man built his house on the sand, and the storm came. And the house on the sand fell, and the house on the rock stood firm, right? Now, there's going to be storms that are going to come. And the question is the foundation any good or not? Does it stand? Does your life stand up to the storm? Because it's not like, are you going to have storms or are you not going to have storms? You're going to have storms. The question is, what's the foundation? This is a clear sign to them, the ones who are persecuting him and causing problems. And for Paul, it's the ones who have thrown him into jail and who are now standing guard over him and who are holding him. This is a clear sign to them of their destruction, but of your salvation and that from God. See, the thing is, how can you be doing this? How can you be happy? Paul, how can you be sitting here writing the guards changing every few hours on him, and he's just telling them about what Jesus is doing? And how can you be doing this? How can you be have joy in your life? Remember, when he was in Philippi the first time, he was beaten unjustly, put in their jail, and him and Silas were singing at midnight, irritating the other prisoners. For it has been granted to you that for the sake of Christ, you should not only believe in him, but also suffer for his sake. Engaged in the same conflict that you saw I had, and now hear that that I still have. Look, he goes, look, for it, sometimes we don't really get this, or we don't really, like, you know how Jesus has said a bunch of times, well, they're going to kill me, bury me, and I'll rise in 3 days. And Peter, the first time, is, no, get behind, and no, that's never going to happen. He says, get behind me, Satan. Later on, even after the whole death of Christ, they're still not getting it. But the Jews understood because they put a guard at his tomb so he couldn't get out because he had said he was going to rise in 3 days. But what happens is sometimes what we hear just goes over our head. And so it's been granted to you that for the sake of Christ, you should not only believe in him. And I think this is written for the Philippians, obviously, first of all, but also for us. That you should not only believe in him, but that also you should suffer for his sake. Sometimes we want to hear the part, oh, wow, you believe in Jesus, and now you have eternal life, and you're going to have joy, and it's going to be great, and it's wonderful, and you're going to just smile the rest of your life, and that's really cool. But he says, but wait a second, but you should not only believe in him, and it's been granted or ordained of Christ that you should not only believe in him, but also suffer for his sake, engage in the same conflict that you saw I had, and now hear that I still have. There's, you know, throughout the New Testament, it talks many, many times of suffering, joy, you know. Back in the Old Testament, it says in Isaiah, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. Through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned, and the flames shall not consume you. And he's talking, you know, throughout the Bible, James says, you know, count it all joy when you fall into adverse trials and temptations. And this is going to happen. Now, part of it, this is also why we need each other. Because whatever you're going through, someone else is going through, or has gone through, or will be going through. And we can use all tenses of verbs on this case. But you know what? It's like whatever's the struggle you're having, someone else has had and someone else will have. And either you can get strength from someone else who's gone through this river and they can pull you through, show you where the sandbars are and how you can get across. Or you're maybe going through this and then you're going to pass this to the next person and bring them through and help them. And this is why we don't want to isolate ourselves, why we want to be part of our fellowship, part of our group, and part of getting to know people and understanding them and understanding them. Look, let's talk about our last little thing here. Discover joy. First thing, I think, to help us understand and discover joy is that you just understand you've won. You win. You have won. You know what? Because if you know Christ, it doesn't matter if you live or if you die. You already won. It's a win-win. You can't get away from it. If you're here, Jesus has something for you to do. If you're not here, you're with him. It's a win both ways. Like, we don't need to walk around all sad and sorry and upset and this. Just understand, hey, it's... And, you know, sometimes people are like, well, you're kind of a Pollyanna because you say everything's good and this and this. Hey, I had a friend, my friend Jim spoke to the men's group one day, and he's got all kinds of things that you could totally go crazy about. And he's been through some very difficult things. He goes, man, if you say, how are you doing? He goes, I'm ecstatically happy today. I'm more happy than anyone should possibly. It shouldn't be legal to be as happy as I am. You know, he says stuff like that all the time. And he's got two, he had, one of his children has died, and the other, both of them were severely handicapped. They both outlived this disease by any length, measure of time that anybody could possibly. When he decided, the doctors told him when both of them were born, they said, you should just let them die. He's like, we're not letting them die. And they said, look, then the doctors told him, look, if you try to take these kids home and raise them, your wife will go crazy, you're going to go bankrupt, and you'll be divorced. So you need to let them die. He's like, we're not letting them die. And he said, well, one of the things that struck him was how he said then he knew part that it was very difficult because the boys can't do anything or couldn't. Now the one that's still alive can't do anything. And he needs constant attention. He's like 30 years old now. And he's like, he knew that this was extremely difficult on his wife, taking care of him. Eventually they got some help, and the Lord worked all this out where they could get some nursing care and some help. But for the first few years, he said, man, you know, he was afraid he would come home and it would just be like so hard on his wife. And he had to go work, and that she'd take care of these kids that needed like 24/7 attention that was extremely difficult. And he said, so he knew, look, if he comes home all discouraged, it's going to like send her into the pit. So he said he knew his role in this situation was, no, I'm going to make a decision that I'm going to have joy in my life, and I'm going to have it, and I don't care what happens. And he said, well, his wife goes, well, you're so happy, you're dreaming. He says, well, don't wake me up. Fine, I'm dreaming. That's fine. Just don't wake me up. And you know what? And the thing is, like that, if we understand, as we get closer to Christ, it's kind of like those giant stars, as we get closer and closer, he's bigger and bigger. All of a sudden, our problems aren't so little. I mean, our problems aren't so big. Our problems are little. He's the big one. You've already won. Like, understand this, and it's life-changing. It changes the way you see everything. And number two, understand that, look, Christ is working in this. Christ is working. We think, oh, this is so hard. God's abandoned me. Now I'm on my own. Now I have to think. No. The only way he's going to strengthen you is through stretching you, pushing you, prodding you, making things uncomfortable for you. Then you change. When I was up on the roof a little bit this week helping him, and when we were at the stage where we had the rafters run like this, then we had to move, go back and forth, and I went back and forth there a bunch of times. And so then the thing is, I had to, like, you know, most people here know I had that knee surgery this year, so I had to step up over these beams and go like this. And, you know, and then by the end of the day, I'm like, I'm going to make myself a little thing I have to step over because it really loosened up my knee. Like, this is really good. I won't do it on the roof, you know, but it was like, you know what? Like, how you think you're, like, John, how do you think your knee is going to bend more? You bend it. Well, what if it hurts a little bit? You keep bending it. Then that's how it bends. Well, this is what God's doing in your life. Well, it doesn't feel good. Well, nobody said it was, I never heard him say, and all this is going to feel great. It doesn't say that. It says that Christ is working in you. Jesus said, whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Hebrews, it says, for the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained in it. Peter said, beloved, do not be surprised when the fiery trial, when it comes upon you to test you as though some strange thing were happening to you. Look, this isn't strange. It's not weird. It doesn't feel good, but it brings results. It makes you stronger. It turns you into the person that God wants you to be. Through this whole thing, it's not like, well, it's all over. No. God's working in your life. And understand that. And then the last thing is embrace it. Look, when we understand that we're in a win-win, we understand that through these struggles, difficulties, issues, and look, I know that in this room there's some very, very difficult struggles that, listen, everybody has some struggles, and some of the struggles just seem like ridiculously hard and seem like, Paul, unfair, unjust, wrong. But you know what that means? That means God thinks you're to the point where you can handle that. Oh, God, I don't think I can handle as much as you think I can handle. That might be true, but he thinks you can. Embrace it. Go, man, God's doing something. A lot of times if we're coming in under attack, we go, man, I'm under attack. You know what that means? You're doing something that somebody thinks is worth attacking. If you're doing nothing, who's going to attack that? Just keep doing nothing over there. That's fine. You know what? like I say, I want to go back. Alexander Fleming wasn't the first person to see that mold affected Staphylococcus. He was the first person to see it and think, what does this mean? How can I make this into something? Could somebody be helped by this? What's going on here? And I think a lot of times we need to go back to this with our life. There's stuff that you're struggling with. It's hard. But look, think the end game, you win. End story, you already won. You know, tonight's the fifth game of the World Series. And I don't know who's going to win that. Tomorrow, they'll have a lot less tension in that because you can go, oh. You know, if I saw the replay of last night's game and it's, what was it, the seventh inning and the Mets were ahead and the Royals were behind, but the Royals won the game. At that point, I would look at, oh, yeah, well, they're behind now, but they're going to win. That's your life. You may be behind right now, but you're going to win. It changes everything when you start looking at life. It's like, hey, it's not like, you know, oh, you know how the movie goes, oh, it's this, then all of a sudden it gets scary, then it looks like you, oh, no, no. And then, you know, but if you know the end, if you read the end, last page of the book, well, the hero did live. It was also a clue that there's a 17-series book, and he's in the last one to have his name on it. So it's kind of a clue he might have survived that in book one. But you know what? You look at the end. Like, where's it going? And Christ is working. He didn't say it was going to be easy. He said he's going to help you grow. And then just embrace it. And you know what you'll find? Joy. You'll find peace. You'll find the things that you're looking for. You'll find by recognizing who Jesus is, getting closer to him, magnifying him in your life. Let's pray. Father, we thank you. Thank you for your goodness. Thank you for your love. Thank you for how you're working in our lives. Thank you that even though things sometimes just don't seem to be the things we want,